You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Hatoush Utbek. She's in London right now. Hatoush, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I know you're a curator and a writer, and we're going to talk about some of your shows, but just to begin and to introduce yourself to the audience, can you tell me how you define yourself as a curator and writer and what the scope of your practice is?
Yeah, with pleasure. I'm an independent curator and writer, and I'm very much interested in concept-oriented curating, if you could say that, and I like producing statements through my projects, and that could be through text, but mostly through exhibitions. And I'm interested in grasping an international scope of understanding art or relating to contemporary art in general. And I come from a science background, so I could say that I have a multidisciplinary approach to the understanding or the production of the domain of knowledge as a shared pool. So it's a very, very conceptual, but like a wide range that I'm very much interested in commissioning artists, like thinking together, conversing together, and investigating collaboratively.
And you said you came from a scientific background. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What that means?
Yeah, sure. I have an undergraduate degree in abstract mathematics. And so I studied topology before I kind of embarked into the world of art.
Okay, so I have to ask you a little bit about that. Abstract mathematics. That sounds very, very difficult. What does that mean? That means topology? What does that cover, abstract mathematics?
I mean, in short, you come up with theorems, and you try to prove them, and by proving them, you can produce understandings that of realities as such. So it's from the basics of like proving that square root of 2 is an irrational number, which is a given, but you have to prove it, to creating systems or fields and matching them into the real plane. So it's very abstract, very ephemeral thinking in a way, but it does have concrete manifestations.
So that was what your undergraduate work did. And if I can ask, was there a final project in abstract mathematics that you did? What would be a thesis in that? Or did you have a thing at the end?
Yeah. No, I had. I wrote my thesis on incompleteness theorems of Kurt Gödel, which were quite revolutionary at a time in 1932 when Brecht and Frege thought that they could actually put math in a 1,000-page book called The Principia Mathematica. Gödel came up and introduced the concept of incompleteness, which is a condition that is not without or that is not lacking, but a concept that I also draw many parallels with art as well. That it is that art, hopefully, and is an incomplete system. But,
so that's very interesting. So maybe we should talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
Your thesis was in this concept of incompleteness, and in that thesis, you were also making parallels to the art world.
I did a little bit. I mean, you might know this, like, most infamous book by Hofstadter. It was called Gödel Escherbach, and he is drawing parallels between Bach's fugues and Escher's drawings. This kind of like a
maze-like drawings,
right? Like mini fractals, if you could also say that. Like it has its mini universes within, or it has many entrance points to the same picture. And Gödel's incompleteness theorem.
And so then, you know, that's very interesting. And so, you know, maybe that's a good segue into some of the projects that you began developing in your life and career as a curator. I know there's one you did at the ICA. Would that be a good one to start with and maybe describe how that worked, the 50 shows, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that actually is a very good example that I could give even concrete illustrations of what I meant about topology and abstract math and its relationship to art.
Very good. I'd love that because I think for me and for the audience, that's a very abstract idea, but a fascinating one to try to grasp and understand through the what you're going to describe as your curatorial practice. So yeah, please go on.
Okay, brilliant. So Fig 2 is a revival of a project called Fig 1, which took place in London 15 years ago, that was initiated by Mark Francis and Dave Jopling, where Mark Francis ended up curating 50 shows in 50 weeks in a house in Soho. And it was basically responding to what London has to offer. And it has a big list of household names that from the perspective of now, you know, like from Chapman Brothers to Anish Kapoor to Gilbert and George to Runa Islam, Mona Hatoum, Carrie Young. And Fig 2 is the revival of this epic project where I was invited to curate 50 shows in 50 weeks that would take place at the ICA, Institute of Contemporary Art in London. And we facilitated the ICA studio. And this 50 exhibitions was quite demanding in the sense that I would come up with a new exhibition every week, and every Monday we would have an opening. And the idea or the approach I wanted to bring to London was to do something that was not being done here, but at the same time to capture the aesthetic and critical currency of our times. So it was a London-specific project, but with a broad scheme of understanding the urgencies and the desires of our contemporary moment. And the way in which I configured this 50 shows is almost like if you could imagine a giant house with 50 rooms, and each room is connected to another, so but differing in size, in scale, in color, in feeling, in smell. And it's not only a linear connection of a giant, long, elongated house, but it is a house and tree, a house of volume. So it is. It has floors. So if you have even played the game of like snakes and ladders, that many rooms are also cross-connected to one another. So if I could make it a mathematical configuration that each week is leading to another with a thread, and you have to imagine different threads or different wavelengths that are intersecting across the weeks, so that week two would be also connected to, you know, week one and week three, but at the same time, week two could be in another grouping of connections or commonalities with week seven, week 12, week 35, week 48.
I see, but how would the viewer discern all those connections? Those connections are there. But the audience is seeing one show at a time, correct?
Exactly.
How do all those threads, is what I'm asking, relate to the mathematical idea of incompleteness, or were you talking about something else?
No, the idea is, you know, it's quite demanding to ask an audience to come to every show. So
right.
I also wanted to make sure that when they come and see only one show or only a group of shows that are indifferent of each other or seemingly in different groupings, still give the idea and the experience of what Fig 2 is trying to do and what Fig 2 is aiming at, producing as that capture that I mentioned before. And it was also about the aesthetic urgencies or the artistic sensitivities. And it did vary from various different media, so it wasn't only performance or only sculpture or only painting, but it was a similar or a common thread that was crossing all the exhibitions, which was, I think, the mannerism of its making. And I could then perhaps pull that towards my curatorial approach, because I do have a very playful approach to curating. So I would also ask the artist that I've invited, what is your innermost desire? What is your urgency at the moment? What would be your dream if you had a carte blanche, a place, a bit of budget to realize what you always wanted to do. And that also brought another dichotomy of relationships into the space. And also, of course, open it up. So the audience, when they arrived, they would immediately meet the artist and the artistic urgency. And if they were to actually really follow the program, they could see a picture. And perhaps the picture will be mostly embodied or in the publication itself, where you will be able to cross the weeks and see different relationships that are emerging across the whole program.
So, through the catalog, we could also begin to see that much easier, even if we didn't see all the shows.
Exactly. Or through the website, which functions as an archive as well.
That's very exciting. And how was that show received? How did that work? Did you feel it was as successful as you wanted?
It was actually very successful to my joy as well, in the sense in which we had every Monday an audience of 150, 200 people coming, if not 400 people queuing to enter the exhibition space. And I think overall it was quite a big success, because also London responded really well. And I have invited artists of different calibre. So there were very young artists who had their first solo shows in London, or there were very established ones who would do something so unexpected and uncommon that would also draw many audiences from various different backgrounds and interests.
That's an exciting show and an ambitious one. It sounds exhausting. That's an enormous amount of work also.
It was indeed, I mean, I was performing in Stolingen, the installing. I had an amazing team, so dedicated, and we would only have 11 hours to turn over a show. So, and sometimes we would have a giant fender shipped from China, and next week it would be a 9-channel video installation. So I didn't make it easy for myself as well, but at the same time it was really important to be able to provide the space that the artists that I have invited needed. And so overall I worked with 60 artists in the whole program, because I also introduced collaborations or introduced solo shows of artist duos, long-standing artist duos. And then we had like 405 contributors, such as, you know, like we worked with dancers or cybernetic experts who gave a talk, or we would have architects and mathematicians coming in and collaborating on different projects with us. So
once the shows were all running and up, these many other collaborators from different fields would come in and somehow collaborate with the show while it was already up, or in the building of the show. How did they collaborate is what I'm asking, these wonderful people.
It varied, actually. For instance, I also wanted to make a cross-disciplinary program, so it wasn't only visual artists. So, for instance, Tom McCarthy, fiction writer, he took 1 week, and then we collaborated with Laura Hopkins. Perhaps you might know her. She was also working with Wooster Group, designing the stages. And so Tom McCarthy took 1 week, where we transformed the exhibition space into the live and work environment of the protagonist of his latest novel, Staten Island. And for that novel, we also did a think tank where we had Clementine Delis, who is an anthropologist and a branding expert and a fiction writer, to talk about different crossovers, industry disciplines. Or we read the novel from beginning to end as a homage to Onkavara's Million Year Readings. And then for another week, I paired an astrophysicist, Roberto Trotta, to collaborate with two artists, Ole Hagen and David Cheeseman. And they came up with a show all together. And we were looking into the speculative forces of quantum physics, astrophysics, and art. So in that sense, or like we had Luna Talks, which was about all looking into future scenarios with Marjolein Dijkman, where we had 32-hour-long talks throughout the week with cybernetic experts, again, or big data analysts, environmental activists, as well as experts of concepts of time, or anthropologists, you name it.
Now, I love that. That sounds so exciting. those were a lot of people and a lot of talks. Were they going on a kind of marathon basis, like people talking all night, or was there a few collaborations and talks a day? I mean, it just sounds like a lot to fit into even those 50 shows.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, like with Marjolein, it was very intense. It was almost like performing a production of discourse about future. And so we would have those sessions, and each session would take around 3 to 4 hours. So we would start in the morning and end in the evening. And I think we had it throughout the whole day because we were open 7 days a week, you know, from Monday night until Sunday late afternoon. So we had some time. But yeah, with Marjolein, I think we filled almost the whole week. Yeah, I didn't sleep much last year, I think.
but the gallery wasn't open all night, was it? Was the gallery open all night?
No, we had late Thursday, so we would be open until 9 p.m. And sometimes if we had an event or a screening or a performance, we would always coordinate with the ICA because STIG2 is an independent project from the ICA, but took place at the ICA, so we were compliant with the regularities of the institution. So we had to kind of respect their opening hours and closing hours, but we could operate within those demarcations because they have a cinema, so they're mostly open until 11 p.m. every day, which was quite good at times.
That's wonderful. So that's I'm really glad we talked all about that show, and especially its relationship to mathematics and science and all these fields, because that kind of articulates your vision or one part of your practice. What's happening now? What are you working on at the moment, or what's coming up in the future, if you want to talk about
that? I mean, after curating 50 shows in a year, I thought it's good to pause and perhaps kind of nurture my writing practice. And I've been writing a lot this year, not only for artist monographs or magazines, but I'm also editing, the most important STIG2 publication, because it's also a legacy of leaving the 2015 record for future generations. And also I'm editing a monograph of an artist called Foss, who I also worked with at STIG2.
And in terms of exhibitions, no exhibitions yet. You're writing now, and that's what you spend your time on.
I have been brewing ideas for exhibitions. I mean, I didn't want to take any exhibition curating role for this year because last year was a very important year for me for also like learning while you're doing it. But I don't want to become a curator who has a template that, you know, uses that template every time because you know that it succeeded once and it's guaranteed to succeed many more times. So I've been also like thinking of different modalities of exhibition making, but also like looking into curating and giving seminars around that as well. And I've been developing some projects, but I can't yet announce what it's going to be. There's one proposal that is very close to be accepted, but I can only announce it after it's done.
Well, I wish you well with that project, whatever it is, and that it does come to fruition. Let me ask you what, which is what I've been asking everybody at the end of the interviews lately. Can you share what book you're reading lately, or books? Is there anything in particular you're reading or not reading?
Yeah, I mean, on my desk, actually, I have 3 books right now. I always read many books together. And I'm reading Chris Krause's I Love Dick because it's been... There has been another wave of Chris Krause at the moment among my friends, so I'm borrowing it from a friend of mine. And I'm reading Nestor Canclini's art theory book and also James Helling's Adorno and Art. So it is a big mix.
That is a big mix. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your work and practice.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me. It's been such a pleasure to be part of your series. I do enjoy listening to them, actually, and receiving your updates on who you have been selecting to interview. It's very nice. It's a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.